Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah. Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Before we get to the business at hand, my brother and sister Floridians, go get some gas right now, because today is the last day without the taxes on the gas. Tomorrow those taxes kick back in, and I heard it's going to be like another 25 cents or something like that. I don't know what it is, but today is going to be better than tomorrow, we think, with regards to the gas. So go get gas. Anyway, yes, in just over a week, we have our election coming up, and we have issues that we want to address. And, you know, I've brought on Attorney Nadine Brown before to talk about some of her concerns, and I have one of our favorites back to talk about some of his concerns, and he's going to update us on some stuff that he's working on, too. Mr. Attorney Kevin Anderson, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm okay. How are you doing?
Okay. Wow. Ooh. Okay. I'm okay too. I think I'm better than okay. I'm tired, but I think I'm better. Okay. But you're okay. And well, as long as you're okay, then that's okay. So what's going on?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Just had a little hoarseness there, but we're working through it and I'll be fine. So thank you for inviting me to the show. It's been a couple of weeks or so since we've last been on the show, but I'm ready to do our thing.
All right.
Thanks also for that update regarding the gasoline. I didn't know about that, but I'm certainly going to go fill up the tank or a few tanks when we get off the air here.
Yes.
Sure, sure. But as you so astutely stated, we have an election coming up, and it's a midterm. It's important because the midterm serves as the foundation for a greater general that will be coming up after the fact. And sometimes people give the midterm as much importance as I think that they should. And then they wind up in a predicament that they don't want to be in. And they ask themselves or each other, like, well, where did this come from? You know, how did we get here? And we get to the destination because of little stops in between during our travels. This is one of those stops. So where do we begin? Talk to me.
I'm letting you take the wheel right now, and because I know there's one thing in particular that you kind of want to talk around, sort of.
Okay, and that thing would be the recent flurry of arrests in Florida for people who returned to our societies, i.e. the communities, after being convicted of certain felony offenses. There's some history. In Florida, we had something known as Amendment 4, which was the authorization to allow individuals who had been convicted of certain felony offenses, with the exception of murder and sexual battery, and who had completed their sentences and paid off all of the fines and court costs and any financial obligations with respect to restitution that might have been due and owing. Those individuals will be allowed to participate in elections. Well, what happened was that the governor of Florida established an agency known as the Office of Election Crimes and Security. And this office empowered certain law enforcement agents to seek the arrest of individuals who may have been in violation of some of the limitations placed on those individuals, at least the facial limitations that were placed on these individuals, because some of the arrestees were, in fact, okay to vote. Some may not have been. Therein lies the controversy. Those who facially were not okay to vote. What happened was that several citizens applied to the supervisors of elections in their respective counties to vote, and ultimately those supervisors of election, they processed those applications and sent them, you know, up the chain and received authorization that was in turn passed along to the citizens who might not have been eligible to vote. These recipients received voter registration cards and all the typical stuff that people who had not been convicted of felonies received, so therefore they voted. And they believed, and mistakenly so, that they had been given the go-ahead to vote at the ballots or through early mails or by any means that has been afforded to the Florida citizens. So, you know, this caused them to be arrested for voter fraud and other related offenses, and has just created an uproar here in Florida regarding the legitimacy of those arrests. Our office, in full transparency, has undertaken some litigation in this regard because we just certainly don't think it was fair to put these people in that position. If they were not eligible to vote, then they should not have been given the authority to do so. And certainly, if they voted and it was inappropriate, they should not be arrested, because the statute requires a willful intent to defraud the voting process in order for there to be a crime. That is a big deal here in Florida. And in fact, on the 21st of October, there was an order coming out of the Miami area dismissing charges against 19 people in this predicament. And the basis for dismissal was that the statewide prosecutor's office exceeded their jurisdiction. The jurisdiction of a statewide prosecutor could only be invoked where the crime occurred over more than one jurisdiction. And these voting cases arise from and happen in respective counties, one county. So those 19 cases are gone. I'm not saying that there won't be an appeal. I'm not saying that there won't be jeopardy issues that we have to deal with. But nonetheless, that's what's happening. So talk to me.
And what's the name of this thing again? This commission that, or whatever it's called, that he established. Go ahead.
The name of the agency is the Office of Election Crimes and Security.
I don't know. To me, when you said it the first time, it just, I went back, like, I want to say 60 years to the 1960s. It just sounds like one of those made up agencies for the deliberate, let's say, exclusion of people that they would rather not have vote.
This is a suppression technique in order to, number one, stop individuals from participating in the electoral process. And number two, to intimidate people who kind of think, you know, I think I'm good, but maybe I'm not. So therefore, I just won't vote at all. So, you know, this is I call it the weaponizing of the law in order to prevent people from voting. And this is a problem, and we don't think it's going to be around. But for right now, it's having an impact. You know, it's having a major impact because over a million people were returned to the voter rolls during the 2020 election. I believe it was over a million. So that is a concern for certain people in politics, and they want to alleviate those concerns by intimidating potential voters or arresting voters who are going to be voters in the next election coming up. And that is what I believe the strategy is. So there are a number of lawyers, including my office and some other outside committees or offices that have undertaken the defense of these folks. And we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that justice is served appropriately on their behalf. And the agency that I've been working with, because I believe that they're okay with me telling the listeners who it is the Florida Restitution Rights Commission, a coalition, I'm sorry, the Florida Restitution Rights Coalition. And they're based out of Orlando, actually.
So, you can, if you've been paying attention, you can definitely tell that there's some sort of change going on because me who have been I've been working almost 20 years off and on with the elections. And usually, now, one of the things that happened is if you were working the polls, you automatically got sent mail-in ballot. Okay, this time, whether you were working them or not, you had to request it. So I found out about that almost at the last minute. They didn't tell any of us. So and then, on top of that, this time, I'm not working Election Day. I'm going to be with a friend of mine. But this time, I had to ask for it for the general election. And I was like, well, wait a minute. I thought if you asked for your ballot for the elections for that year, because one of the things I saw was the request or something was supposed to be good until the end of the year. Now, that's another thing. It's like, so in two more years, I guess, I have to request ballot or ballots again, whether or not I'm working the polls. So, and I haven't had to do a lot of this. I want to say since I got married, you know, there was a whole name change thing and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm just, you know, it is kind of, you've got to kind of pay attention. The other thing that's bothering me though right now, one of the things that, and I'm, you know, I wish I was wrong, and I'm hoping maybe that I'm off, but at the same time, it's just disturbing. My understanding is that, at least in Orange County, 21%, only 21% of eligible voters voted. And then in minority communities, particularly the African-American communities, I think they said 9%.
We have always had that problem in our communities. We show up for the generals in the presidential elections, gubernatorial elections. You know, I think we had a pretty good show up when Governor DeSantis was running against Andrew Gillum. I suspect that was primarily because Andrew Gillum was on the ballot, you know, and a lot of brown and black people wanted to see him succeed. And therefore, there were people, large communities who came out to support him and to ensure that individuals voted because they wanted him in office. That was a pretty good turnout. But historically, the midterms do not show a very good turnout amongst black and brown folks in the communities.
Well, now, and we should be ashamed of ourselves. We really should. Our family members, our predecessors, hooped and hollered and marched and all kinds of stuff to get these rights for us. And the ones that we're still battling to keep now that we're battling to not have manipulated. But we won't go. And the thing that you just said too was that things that they put in place that make it to the point that said, that tell us, well, if this is happening, then, you know, I'm not going to bother. I'm not going to go. We should not be giving up that easy. That is not right. You know, just because it looks like it's going to be a little bit more difficult, or it's another hoop to go through the doggone hoop, jump through the hoop. Because if you don't, and you don't make your vote count, then when people start manipulating the system and putting these agencies in place, you won't have anything to say about it.
I agree. There came a point, you know, where in the iconic civil rights movement involving Dr. King, where there was a decision made regarding whether going to jail would be a deliberate strategy in order to advance the civil rights movement. And that was a difficult discussion. It was a difficult decision that was ultimately made. And you're saying that, you know, folks should be willing to go the long haul and should be willing to kind of take one on the chin and to, don't be discouraged. But we are, because no one wants pain. No one wants to jeopardize their liberty when it comes to something that they just simply don't have to do, even though we believe
true.
That it's important.
Okay, but that's true. But we're not asking – this is the thing. We're not asking people to go to jail. We're not asking anybody to march. We're just asking you, you know, go make sure your information is correct on the paperwork. Make sure you show up on election day. You know, if the information isn't correct, then just go and get it corrected. It's not as hard as it was when we were fighting for our right to vote. We know the things that's what I'm saying. We're not asking you to do all of the intensive labor that was already done. That is done. So just reap the benefits of it and go and take your butt to the polls and vote.
Well, let's look at it from the perspective of a returning citizen. You are asking them to put themselves in that position from their perspective, because these are people who've done time. These are people
right.
who already have tasted the whip on their backs, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And like for you and me, yeah, it's cool. We could say, go ahead and do it, man. Go ahead. But for them, it's like, well, hold on, man. I've already walked down that road. Man, I don't know if I want to go through this again, because they are arresting people. And I'm kind of in that category. And yeah, they could be wrong. But I don't have Mr. Anderson who's going to represent me pro bono. Or I don't have, like, you know, if I get arrested and I sit in jail for like a month, 2 months, 3 months. You know, I have a family. I've got like a job that I was finally able to get. You know, and it, so that is what I'm trying to bring home. That this is intimidation for that person. This is for that person a suppression or a chilling effect that causes them to look at their children when they're sleeping, and to look at their wife as or their husband before they walk out of the door, and to say, you know what, I'm not willing to jeopardize this. Because I worked hard to come back. If you can understand what I'm saying, you know, and that's why you have the Office of Election Crimes and Security.
I do kind of understand. I do also think that there is some value in sacrifice. Okay, you want the easy way, you want the comfortable way, and you know, and you want what you think you deserve and earn, but at the same time, maybe, you know, there's some sacrifices and okay, maybe you may not be the one to do it, but maybe there's somebody out there that needs to make the sacrifice so the kids can look up and say, hey, you know, my mom or my dad, you know, made a sacrifice for, you know, the greater good. You know, I want to be that type of person. I don't know. But, you know, I will be glad when, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but I will be glad when people stop trying to, you know, be, I don't want to say partisan, but, you know, because it's not necessarily partisan as much as I think it is people who feel like there's a limited amount of the goodies And so I'm going to make sure that the restrictions are there so I can make sure that I still have the goodies and some other people may not get them, but I'm fine with that. We've got to start looking out. And you know, I've heard the term before that I've been told, maybe, you know, you sound like a socialist. No, I'm not. I think I sound like, you know, someone that's trying to be a little bit more Christian-like and try to go by, you know, God's rules versus some of those other rules that we got here that don't work for everybody in the right way. So that's just me. But anyway,
I
want to kind of get a little bit more into, are there other issues that when we are making our choices for candidates, what should our key focus be in terms of when we're making that choice?
Well, I can speak to, I call them red issues and black issues. My red issues are things that don't involve my particular practice and what I think I should be addressing from a professional standpoint, even though I certainly engage in those discussions with my colleagues and can do so, you know, at any given point. The red issues are things like, you know, education, the economy, labor, affordable housing, things like national security. Those are the red issues that are out there. Even abortion, those are red issues that are out there. They're out of my wheelhouse in terms of being able to give someone professional advice or comment publicly about that. But my black issues are things that are in my wheelhouse. And I'll tell you, but for openers, let me just kind of give you the preamble. you have to look at the candidate differently, and you have to be honest about. You have to decide what you're looking for in that candidate. You can't just kind of allow the candidate to bring to you what their platform consists of. You have to know what it is that you want that candidate to consist of. And you need to take some time to find out a little bit about that candidate. So many times people will go to the polls and they'll vote for an individual or an idea that is catchy. They've seen it before. They've been at a stoplight and they see the sign that's you know stuck in the mud, and they go, "Oh yeah, I remember that guy, Davis. Okay, yeah." And they just go with Davis because you know the next person or the person beside them they never heard of, or they just remember a jingle or something from a commercial. You know, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find out about the particular candidate regarding certain races. You go online. I tell you, the League of Women Voters, they put out a wonderful voting guide every year that gives you the education for the candidate, whether the person has prior experience, what some of the issues are relative to their platform. Now, and I know that you have to also have your major issues in your mind, and sometimes they'll coincide, and you're able to reconcile the two, and that person may or may not be still your selection. There are always materials out there about a candidate. If you wait until election day, you're probably going to miss the mark regarding an education concerning the candidates. All right, so that's the first step. The second step is to avoid shutting down a particular candidate because you dislike like one thing about them. Oftentimes you'll hear people say, well, you know, that person was good until they said X, Y, and Z, or that person doesn't support this or that. If you do that, I think you will be doing something that you don't do in any other area of your life. How many people divorce their spouses because there's one thing in their spouse's relationship or their lives that they don't like, or they quit their jobs because there's some element of the job that is not satisfactory. We don't. We just don't quit. We just don't make decisions about people generally based on one thing. You know, we look at the whole of what's happening and we decide to either do or not do something because of the whole of the matter and not half of the matter. And I'm telling you now, if our marriages were based on liking everything and agreeing to about everything and agreeing with everything regarding our spouses, we'd be in trouble. And I'm speaking the truth here. So don't apply it when it comes to these political candidates, that because you don't agree with one or two things that they just don't support or that you don't see eye to eye on, that you're just going to write them off. That's nonsense. And there's some people who, believe it or not, G, who stay away from the polls, or they will skip over the box and not vote at all in that particular category or for that particular race because, like, the candidate, I don't know, you know, puts his or her, like, you know, a part in their hair on the right rather than the left. Oh, I don't like that. You know, or, you know, they're wearing a yellow tie. You know what, man? You know, red ties say that, you know, you're confident, you got power, and you can lead. So I'm not, it's stupid. Cut it out. Look at a person as a whole and not just on some minuscule picky-on issue. Next, don't pick a candidate because you like them. Just because you like them. They sound nice. Oh, he's a preacher. I mean, that is like a recipe for disaster. And President Obama, former President Obama, addressed that this weekend. And he talked about Herschel Walker. He said, you know what, man? Don't vote for this guy just because he was a great football player. That is not what we're bringing him on to do. You know? And you wouldn't vote for me to play on the Georgia Bulldogs football team as a fullback. You know, I'd get creased. They would blow me away if I lined up in the backfield. You know, that's not what I do. So, you know, don't look at someone because, like, they sound nice, they look nice, they have a nice walk, or they're handsome, or she's pretty. Like, don't vote for people just because of those superficial facial and sometimes irrelevant factors that they bring to the race. All right, so let me stop right there because, man, I think you're getting ready to start asking me a whole bunch of questions.
Well, I know you scolded me on some of this based on our conversation yesterday. But anyway, I have to say this, you cannot compare the the person in the election to my spouse or you know, that type of situation. No, but you know what? There's really, like you said, you can't wait till the last minute. Even if you do, I mean, we're not advising it, but there's really no excuse. Just for the simple reason, it's not like having to go to the library or to go and pick up a newspaper and you know, try to do all this kind of homework or call in a bunch of people. I mean, all of that is good. But, I mean, there are avenues to find out more information about people. And I want to say this. Don't just look at their website because they're going to make themselves look good as possible.
Amen.
I mean, it's a
Amen.
Good way to get a little bit of information. So, yeah, go, but then go check some other things out, you know, Google. Search their name, you know, see if there's anything about, let's say, their church affiliation or their community affiliations or whatever the case may be. You know, look and just put in their name and put in, you know, go to the news category. See if there have been any incidents that have occurred that they've been involved in, because those will come up as well. You know, so you have to be thorough. You know, you've got to put some value on your vote. And I think that's one of the things, we just don't put enough value on our votes. You know, we don't think they're worth anything. And we have to treat it as something that's worth something, that someone has to earn. I was talking to my husband and about being, I'm nonpartisan. I wasn't always. But in recent years, I became nonpartisan. And I believe, you know,
And even if I'm in a party, I still believe that the person that is running, that's trying to get your vote, they need to earn it. It's worth something. You know, you don't just give away your number on the ballot. You know, voting, you know, they want your numbers, and that's basically what it is. It's a numbers game, you know. But your number is important, and you've got to hold fast to that importance, and make whoever that wants your number in their column work for it. You know,
I agree.
You can't be lazy
about it. I agree.
I
don't think we need to be unreasonable though about that.
Okay.
Because sometimes, you know, we set these unreasonable standards for these politicians, and it's just nonsense. And we stay away from the polls, or we'll vote for another person because of our unreasonableness that we don't even use as a standard in any other area in our lives. Even the food we eat, you know, we're not that critical about the restaurants we go to or the cars we drive. You know, we'll make those decisions at the drop of a hat. You know, but when it comes to politicians, you know, we're acting like, you know, we're the sentinel at the gate. You know, like, you know, letting people in heaven. You know, like, let's keep it reasonable and some put some perspective on it.
Yeah, but I mean, let's go back to what you were talking about, selecting things to eat. Why do you think? Why do you think we have bigger people in our society now where airplane seats don't fit anymore and cars have to be wider and all that type of stuff? We are living with the consequences of making poor decisions, whether it comes down to politicians or, you know, the food that you put on the table in front of you and what you decide to eat. But anyway, got a little bit off track, but we're going to take a quick break. We are here with champion civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welch. We're going to talk about more issues that we think you should consider when you are selecting your candidates during this election season. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welch. And if you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. So, Kevin, let's go back to you were talking about things that are and aren't in your wheelhouse. And I wanted to find out what – in your cases or in, you know, anything that you're involved with, let's say in the community, what are some of the things that you come up against that you say, well, if this person was in office, this might be a little different, or because that person is in office that this is happening? Are there particular issues that you are concerned about when we come out on the other side of this election?
Well, it depends on the office that we're referencing, particularly when it comes to a prosecutor. There are elections that deal with prosecutors, and I'm talking about the state attorney, not, you know, the assistant state attorneys who are working the cases in our courtrooms. Prosecutors will make decisions about things like stand your ground. Those are cases that involve the ability to use force to meet force, or a force when a person is in reasonable fear for their safety, involving the things that could result in bodily injury or death. We saw a trend for a while of people using that particular ground immunity statute to hurt people and to kill people. You know, we had the Sanford incident where a young boy was killed, you know, and his killer was released. He was found not guilty here in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You've got shootings that are taking place based on that. So prosecutors make decisions about, like, who to prosecute and who not to prosecute, or if they prosecute, how they're going to prosecute a person. So That's one of those offices that we need to keep our eye on. Judges.
Mm-hmm.
Judges make important decisions. And,
yep.
They are in these positions of power, both at the county and the circuit court level. They're able to short circuit nonsense out the gate. They're able to set a trend or the momentum in that particular division where the person, the judge is presiding, so that it's understood that if you bring that in here, this is likely going to be the outcome. And, as a trial lawyer, I'll tell you, can read the river, and prosecutors can read the river. When a case lands in a division and you have a history for that particular judge, you kind of know where the case is going to go if the judge gets his or her hands on the matter. So mm-hmm. the office of a judge, that is a big deal. Your local congresspeople, and I'm talking about at the state legislatures, these individuals have an enormous impact on your quality of life. And there are like so many of these people in races that are in the various districts that are carved up in Florida until you really have to focus on your little piece of the earth there to find out, well, who's our guy? If you pull out your voter card, you're going to see that that the card is divided into a number of areas. And just, use that as a beginning legend to kind of move back and to see, well, wow, like this person is going to be in Tallahassee, either at the congressional at the Senate or the House making these decisions. I think those are big, big races. You've got certain things in your area that pertain to issues that are important. For example, like here, we've got a school board race. The school districts are divided into two controversial areas that are high needs and low performance areas for students. And those areas are – it's important that we put in a representative who is going to keep that in mind and is going to make some choices, regarding what we do. Because let me tell you, critical race theory, the truth, is on the ballot. And it's on the ballot because you've got people who are in a position to do things in the classroom or at the policymaking level that will to erode that particular concept. That is one of those things that I think you should be looking at with respect to a candidate. So, I'm very involved in a runoff race here in Palm Beach County with respect to the candidates who are going to be placed on the school board because this is an issue. This, the academic freedom of the teachers to be able to go into a classroom and to run that classroom as he or she sees fit and to speak what they believe should be spoken and not what the bureaucracy says that they have to speak. That's a big deal, these school board races. Now, people don't take the time to learn who the candidates are in those particular races. And I'm telling you right now, the people who are impacted are you and me. The brown and black citizen whose child is going to be put in a position where, because you didn't vote, they are now subjected to decisions by people who do.
Let me ask you a question, because something that you brought up about teachers being able to teach how they want to in the classroom. Now, if I have a child, I have a concern that my child might be indoctrinated in a way that we don't teach at home, that we don't believe in our households. Shouldn't there be some sort of system of checks and balances in terms of what is taught in the classroom? If you want to talk about agency, shouldn't there be some sort of maybe agency or agencies that come together bringing, well-rounded representation of parents and administrators and teachers, so that, you know, and also people that provide curriculum or provide textbooks for the students. Now, I know we're supposed to have these lovely PTAs, but I mean, come on. We half of our, well, I shouldn't say, I can't say half, but we have more than our fair share of parents that don't or can't go to these meetings, you know. But maybe there should be somebody that represents them to deal with some of these issues, because, like I said, I mean, I probably would be concerned if someone was teaching certain things that, you know, in my household. You know, and I'm, because that means I'm going to have a fight with my child in terms of, you know how kids are. Well, they said in school, this, that, and the other. You know, I'm trying to lay down the law in terms of what's supposed to go on in my own household. And if I have someone that's contradictory in the classroom, there's going to be a problem.
I agree with the concept that you're speaking about. But in practice, our executive leadership in this state is telling everyone, we have done that for you. Don't even try it. Established curriculum. And there are published limitations to going outside of that curriculum, which is something that does not account for the critical race theory, as you and I would like those concepts and precepts to be presented to children in the classroom. So it's there. But we don't have a balance. What we need is a balance between these educational issues and also academic freedom in the classroom, because we've got students who need to learn and know the truth without it being diluted or being excluded. And we have educational professionals who are there trying to convey the truth to students, and they're being told not to do so. And in some instances, now they're being sued if they exceed those restrictions that are being imposed on them. And honey, they're not making any money. Teachers don't get paid enough to go through that crap. I'm sorry. And it's a problem. And I'm just going to say it right now. It's because teaching, for the most part, is a female-dominated profession. If these were men teaching, they wouldn't have it. They would get paid better. These teachers would be given rights, which are tantamount to union rights for real. And we wouldn't have this nonsense going down. You know, you look at like fire, you look at policing, those are male-dominated professions or occupations. They get paid out the wazoo. And they have like retirement programs that don't require these people to get another job when they retire. You know, it's nothing to go into a bar to get something to drink or to go into a restaurant and to have a teacher walk over to you and take your order because you've got to take a second job, or to go to Dillard's to go buy a suit or a pair of shoes. And that teacher is there working because to make ends meet, this is what has to occur. Teachers need to make more money, you know, and I think that a part of that academic suppression is because teachers are being victimized due in part to this sexist ideology regarding like who they are in those classrooms.
You know, it's and you know what the big problem is. The big problem with this whole critical race theory. I don't even like the name, but you know the whole problem is that people don't want to hear the truth. People think that children can't handle bad news, okay? And I think that you have to give children the truth in context that they can, in a context that they can understand it. You know, you just don't just say, oh, no, you know, it didn't happen like that. You know, it happened like that. It was unfortunate. We learned from our mistakes and we grow and move on, because that's just life in general anyway. You know, that's the way you're supposed to do. You know, things happen. Mistakes are made. You learn from the mistakes. You keep going, and you use those lessons, you know, to get you through to the next phase of life. That's just it. We got to stop, you know, but with this whole thing against critical race theory or everything, you know, no one wants to hear that, yeah, we have an ugly past as a country. You know, we have an ugly past as a country. You know, a lot of our religious institutions, they have ugly past. Educational institutions, they have ugly past. Our systems have ugly past. You know, there's good and bad. There's no all the way good or all the way bad.
Understood. The truth
is power. That's true.
And that, I think that is one of the principal reasons why the critical race theory is limited or diluted. Not only that, the whole characterization of the truth being critical race theory is beginning to be demonized and weaponized, similar to the concept of defunding the police, whereby it has this negative connotation, and it's this moniker now that's being tossed around in order to be derogatory with respect to its very concepts. So, but the fact of the matter is that when you learn the truth sets you free, and the truth puts you in a position where, like, now you know what happened, and now you understand that what people are saying about you or saying about your history is a lie. And now I can stand up and hold my head up, man, and, you know, tighten up my belt, you know, and shake the dust off me so that, like, I can move on. Because all this time, man, I was thought about this. You thought about me like this, and this is not really what I am or where I came from? Like, wait a minute, hold on. Yeah, it empowers you, and it gives you confidence. And with that confidence, you become competitive. And with that competition, sometimes you win, and you win more and more and more. And that winning is what this whole suppression is all about. Stopping you winning.
For sure. I think about some things that my mom used to say. I won't go into it, but it's basically about, you know, what you do, what you can do, what you usually do when you have an opportunity. You know, when you're given an opportunity, you know, and especially if you're hungry for it, you excel, you know, for the most part.
Amen. So that's what it's all about. That's in its underpinning. It's about stopping you from seeing that, like, man, you can do things, because everything is said about you from the beginning, or a lot of it is not accurate. But let me kind of move on here, because you asked me to point out some things that I think people should be thinking about. So we talked about critical race theory. Another thing is police reform. We cannot let a candidate slip through the cracks who doesn't at least have that on their minds. We have a number of things happening, like excessive force. That is a big deal. People are being shot down in our streets. People are being taken into custody in a manner that's unreasonable. And I think that folks need to have a politician, to the extent that their office is one that is capable of addressing these issues, who understands that the Fourth Amendment is alive and well, and it's for our best interest. And when we have violations in the constitutional context of the Fourth Amendment, that they will be addressed. So that's a big deal, looking to see whether they understand that the Fourth Amendment is not this idea that doesn't have legs and isn't alive, that it's a real fluid concept in our culture. The First Amendment, that is another thing that should be on the minds of individuals who are looking at a candidate who can impact your ability to speak and to assemble. You know, we've had an attack on those rights recently. Again, under our current administration, to criminalize getting together, a purpose of protesting.
And when you say our current administration, you mean our current state administration, correct?
I'm talking about the state administration here in Florida. Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. I'm not talking about the Biden administration. So thank you for, you know, magnifying that, because that could have been totally taken out of context.
But okay.
You know, there was a problem, you know, two or three people getting together and resulting in an arrest without necessarily a probable cause analysis, and then bail being restricted or not afforded to the arrestee until like the next day. And that had a chilling effect on the willingness of groups to get together to protest or to at least address lawfully things that should be addressed, like, you know, the No Justice, No Peace rallies that we saw and things that were happening, you know, around the George Floyd killing, things that were happening around the Breonna Taylor killing. These are things that could not have happened. So Fifth Amendment security is a big deal. To be able to say what I need to say, you know, don't censor me. Those are issues that if your candidate is in a position to address, you need to understand what they want and what they don't want. That's a pretty big thing there. Political violence. Let me go to that, okay? Because political violence seems to be the order of the day, and it seems to be now the medicine that certain people are trying to serve up to stop folks from voting and to stop folks from being active in the political process. Ballot box issues. You know, apparently, like, people think it's okay to hang out at the ballot box with guns and to hang out at the ballot box with an ominous presence to make you feel like you better not do the wrong thing when you approach this ballot box, or you better only have like one or two, or X, Y, and Z is going to happen. That has a chilling effect on people. Now, I live in South Florida, but there are people in other parts of Florida that aren't as, like, kind of protected. The boxes are in these desolate areas because, understand this, a lot of the boxes moved, you know, and some of the boxes, like, have been removed to a point where they are limited. So in these rural areas where you've got, you know, people going to the ballot box alone, it can be an intimidating thought that you might be met by someone who doesn't want you to put anything in that box. You talk about political violence. January 6th was political violence, and that was an all-out assault on the highest form of government at our Capitol. And understand that if people will assemble to do that, they will do – that was not a secret. That was not something that just kind of came up overnight and all of a sudden folks just coincidentally met at a certain location. That was orchestrated. And it is still out there. That's an issue. And the political candidate has to have the courage to deal with that issue because that is not over yet. Look at Nancy Pelosi's husband.
I was just thinking about that. Yes.
Absolutely.
That is insane.
Insane. And thank God her husband had the – and for people who don't know, because there are folks who probably are going, what happened? All right, so Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House and the U.S. Congressional House, the Congress, the House you know, of Congress. And her husband was in his home when an individual came to the house. The person's name is David DePape or DePape. And this individual went inside the house and held Mr. Pelosi against his will and
was actually looking for Nancy.
Right. Yes. He like looking for her, you know, and I like your the voice over there, like, where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? And so, you know, her husband had the presence of mind to kind of fake that he was going to go to the bathroom, and he went to the bathroom, and his phone was charging in the bathroom, and so he was able to open the line for 911, and they heard what was going on and that he wasn't coming back to the phone. So when the police conducted a welfare check, they got there. And this idiot, and not Nancy Pelosi's husband, but this guy who was holding him, decided this was the move. This was the moment when he was going to, like, you know, hurt her husband. So he takes this hammer that he brought in and starts hitting him in the head with it. And you know, obviously,
I mean,
he didn't kill him, but he hurt him pretty
no
bad.
No joke. Yeah, skull fracture.
Hurt him pretty bad.
Yeah, in the hospital.
Yeah. And this guy has, now we know, been a target for these conspiracy theories regarding the 2020 election. And also, he was on the radar for some participation, at least verbally, with the January 6th violence that happened at our nation's capital. And this guy has also uttered threats, political threats, in the past. So political violence is something that is now what's on the table, and we have to be vigilant about that. And if there's a candidate who's in a position who can deal with policies and who can deal with what's necessary to address this type of violence, you want to make sure that you at least understand that they are willing to do so.
Okay, but now, and we don't have enough time to discuss this, so we're going to have to discuss this at another time. But, you know, we talked about the, you know, who's going to preserve the freedom of speech and all that kind of stuff, but then you have people who kind of abuse it. So, Kevin, where do you draw the line, man?
I don't know that you do. You can say what you want to say, as long as what you're saying isn't a fighting word to evoke immediate violence. You know, I'm really reluctant to stop people from saying what they want to say because I want to say what I want to say. So
you say what you want.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to say what you want. Just as, remember what we used to say, just don't put your hands on me.
Yeah.
So hey,
there's something else we got to get into later because I want to know how do we sit in our cars and eat a hamburger and not get shot? That's what I want to know.
Not get shot. I don't know, man. You might want to, you know, go through the drive-thru and take it home. No. But
that's,
man,
a discussion for another day. If you all don't know about that story, you need to look up the young man that got shot sitting in his car eating a hamburger by a police officer who is no longer, well, former police officer now. So.
Yep.
Anyway,
yep.
Kevin. Yep. You got to come back
soon. Don't shut me down yet.
Oh, okay.
Man,
quickly. Got to go.
Go see Till. Till. The Medgar Evers story. Okay? T-I-L-L. You've heard of it, I'm sure.
Till.
Correct?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I'm doing campaign stuff, but I am going.
Emmett Till. Well, Emmett Till. Yeah. I don't know what I'm talking about. Oh, wow.
No, but it's the movie called Till. Yeah. But, yeah, it's about.
I said Medgar Evers.
No. It's Emmett Till. It's Till. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And
okay.
Go see The Woman King. I have to do a plus for Woman King. So, but thank you. You got to come back soon. We got to have you back because there's stuff we got to talk about still. But appreciate your input. All right. Take care. Be well. And thank you all for listening.
Care.
And this has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, D. Be well, be safe, be blessed. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Go get some gas now.